Welcome to the Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Danzy Senna's latest novel, Colored Television, is a take on love and ambition, failure and reinvention, and the racial identity industrial complex. Her new novel follows novelist Jane as she struggles to create a picture-perfect life with her painter husband, Lenny. They, along with their two kids, are house-sitting in their friend's luxurious home, high in the hills above Los Angeles, and growing more comfortable by the day, perhaps even too comfortable, as the wine cabinet empties and Jane begins calling the home her own. But when things don't work out quite as planned, Jane turns her desperate gaze to Hollywood. Danzy Senna is the author of four previous works of fiction, including the best-selling Caucasia, and most recently, New People, as well as a memoir, the recipient of numerous awards and honors. She teaches at the University of Southern California, where she teaches writing, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Danzy Senna to this week's book show. How are you?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'm well. Great pleasure
Good.
to have you on the program. The new novel, Colored Television. And the book is, I just found it to be a tremendous, because there's a lot going on, and there's a lot that you are letting us think about and cogitate on. And I'm curious as to what brought you to that point of wanting to bite the apple of these particular subjects.
Well, I've been living in LA for almost two decades and writing novels. And I kept, wanting to write an LA novel because most of my novels have taken place in other places. And what interested me was the sort of periphery of Hollywood, all the people who are not working directly in Hollywood and are sort of living in the shadows, and novelists in particular, because as I've lived here for almost 20 years, I've had the sense of being kind of irrelevant to the kind of economy of this whole city. And like going to a party and saying I write novels and people saying, oh, have any of them been made into anything yet? The idea of like the novel as last century storytelling form and television as this century storytelling form, and sort of struggling with those feelings of irrelevance and financial desperation, and feeling like it would be fun to write a novel about a family in that kind of precarious situation in this world of Hollywood.
It is a precarious situation because the love, it seems, Jane has had one novel that comes out that is okay, moderately successful with the critics, not so successful people actually buying it. And then she takes on this project. Her agent says, just grind out your second novel, get it over with, and then move on. But then this novel becomes a tome.
Yeah, she spends 10 years working on this book in which she tries to take on 400 years of what she calls mulattoes in America from the very beginning to the present day. And, it's anyone who's ever written a novel over years sort of knows some sliver of this feeling of getting kind of buried in the story that you've taken on and feeling like you've taken on more than you can handle. And so she's literally, brought her family to financial ruin, and she's alienated herself from her children and her spouse. And I was kind of having fun with the way that a kind of novel can really ruin your life if you don't create restraints around it. And I've had some like taste of that myself. So it was kind of me going into the kind of gallows humor of being a novelist in this moment.
Does that come from the time? I mean, in this case, it's taking over a decade. So yes, that certainly is what is, can cause problems as far as forward momentum. But for you, I guess it can be more granular and smaller as well of the problems that you run into just day to day.
Yeah, I mean, a novel requires for you to fully immerse yourself in a kind of dream state. And that's when, you're giving your most to your novel, is when you're thinking about it all the time and you kind of enter it and feel like you're half swimming in this other world. And when you have children and a job and a marriage and a life outside of that novel, They really are in competition. Like, I don't know how to pretty that situation up, but the real world and the novel world really are kind of competing with one another. And so to drag that on for 10 years and for the entirety of your children's, lives so far, and the entirety of your marriage, I thought, that could really start to like chip away at these relationships, the art kind of taking precedence over life. Sort of what Jane is struggling with when we enter this novel.
Did you have the issue of figuring out how the second novel was going to come after the release of the first?
For my personal
Yes.
experience? Yeah, no, I mean, it was me playing with that a little bit because I had a first novel, Caucasia, that did really well and much better than Jane's first novel. By the way, I did make things worse in this book. But my second novel, was kind of a second novel is always like the birth of comparison. Your first novel, you're just this shiny new debut novelist. And then the second novel is either, you're trying to kind of still break into being noticed, or you're trying to kind of show that you're not a one-hit wonder. And so the second novel takes on all this other meaning than the first novel ever did. And I kind of let that be more of a horror story than it was for me in real life. But my second novel did have a kind of rough life and was a difficult experience for me. So I was drawing in some ways on that.
There's a point where you have to let it go, though, right? I mean, there's a point where you say,
Yeah.
okay, if there's a lesson to be learned here, I learned it. If there isn't, I didn't, and let's go on.
Yeah, no, I have a very hard time letting go of projects, and my sort of perfectionism gets in the way of my completionism with the second novel and also my first. It was like it was never going to be good enough for me. So my brother is a visual artist and said to me at one point, the work of art that you're creating is really a record of who you are in a moment and the preoccupations you have in a particular time in your life. And if you try to drag that into the next part of your life, you start to diminish that record. So that was really helpful to me. And I think Jane doesn't quite see that. She's trying to write this giant, what she calls a mansplaining second novel that's going to, have this huge expanse. She's going to be the voice of her people. So there's a lot that she, I think, does take some really wrong turns already when this novel begins.
And obviously, you're focusing on Jane, but you're focusing on the family, how it's impacting your children, how it's impacting your husband, how it's impacting the relationship with her husband, who, oh, by the way, is also an artist.
Yeah, no, I mean the two of them are artists, and they got married at a point when this seemed romantic to be two artists being married, and they were going to be sort of bohemian and travel around and not feel encumbered by these capitalist problems of home ownership. And so now they're in their 40s and they have two children, one of whom has, sort of special needs, and it's starting to look a lot less romantic to Jane, this life she signed on to of the starving artist. And, I was also interested in that they come from really different class backgrounds. Her husband grew up in the middle class, the child of professionals. So for him, it still holds some allure and exoticism to be this kind of wandering bohemian couple. And for her, she grew up with those parents and she knows the limits of the nomadic childhood and the artsy childhood. So she's really lost all kind of feeling of romance about.
Can you talk a little bit about, you're writing what you see, obviously, but you're also writing about situations and characters that really are not represented in current fiction.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been writing characters who are mixed race from the very beginning of my first novel, and characters in particular who are the children of a black, white, interracial couple. And to me, that's the universal neutral ground upon which I write. Like, that is the sort of everyone has a territory and a geography they write from, and that's what I write from. But I'm always surprised at how little representation there is of that story, since it seems so foundational to this country's identity. And since we've always been here, people of my particular background, and it holds so many truths in it about the identity of this country and the sort of taking the temperature of this country. And we're growing in numbers and we're sort of like the fastest growing demographic. There's still this gap between who is in this country and what we see represented on television and even in literature, and how that particular point of view is represented. You know, whether it's represented as a kind of predicament or a problem or a tragedy, or whether it's represented in all of its complexity, is what I'm interested in.
There even seems to be a push-pull on the what I will call to crib what you write about in the book is sort of the 23andMe-ism of all of it.
Yeah, no, when Jane first meets the television producer, he wants to know what her percentages are, and he's a black film television producer who's trying to make this show with her, and she doesn't particularly present as half black and half white, and so he's asking for her numbers, and he says, you know, I know you mixed people like to spit into vials, and you know, he's right. Mixed people do like to do those. Find out what our percentages are. And so she kind of has to give him her numbers breakdown, and she rounds up a little bit. She rounds up
Right.
her African heritage a little bit to hope that she's legitimate in his eyes.
And Lenny is less interested in all that.
Yeah, Lenny, I mean, I was interested in art and representation and race in general in this novel. And whereas Jane has really kind of gone fully into this question of race in America and her people, these mixed race people throughout history. Lenny has been an abstract expressionist, and his paintings don't show black bodies in them. And, you know, one of the reviews of his work says, you know, I would have never known this artist was black. And he's finding that its own kind of liability, that his work doesn't sell because it doesn't trade on these representational, you know, images of blackness that people have come to expect from the black artist. And he resists that. So they're kind of doing totally different things, but they both are hitting a wall in terms of the marketplace and what they can do with their art.
Danzy Senna is the author of Colored Television, the new novel. It is out from Riverhead Books. Lenny, her husband, is a rather disgruntled, maybe a word, right?
Yeah, he's cranky and ironic and sort of cynical about a lot of the things that she holds dear. And he really wants them to move and live outside of America. He's kind of over this country and wants them to live as expats. And so that's the other threat on her, is that she wants them to live in California and have a suburban home and all the bourgeois niceties. And that's her dirty little secret, that she's long ago left behind the fantasy of them being nomads and expats, and he still really wants this for them and their children.
Well, that comes off as quite funny too. I mean, there's a lot of humor in that give and take between those two characters.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a constant source of humor that, in a way, the novel is about her having an affair, but with her bourgeois fantasies. It's less of like the traditional marriage plot, but she's actually sort of having an affair with a television, having an affair with Restoration Hardware and, you know, Pottery Barn catalogs, like the most mid sort of things that he would look down upon. And he still thinks of them as very much high art people, and she's kind of gone down into the lower realms, which is television.
What is it about television that makes it a lower realm in the sense that this is something that I think that Jane knows about, knows the difficulties, and yet also knows what can happen if it goes right. She sees it as a panacea.
Yeah, I mean, I was drawing on all my own feelings, because I don't see television as a lower realm. I think television can be great, and I love television when it's good and even when it's bad. I think television serves a very, very important purpose, you know, and there's some really incredible writing going on in television. And her fear really is that television, and especially prestige television, has kind of replaced the novel, because television has gotten smarter and more sophisticated. She's teaching at a college, and she notices that even the English professors, people who've devoted their lives to the study of literature, all they talk about is like, what did they watch on television last night? So it's a book about identity on multiple levels and the identity of the culture and what kind of mirror we're looking into. I think the novel was always the thing that we look to see ourselves, and she's feeling that it's been replaced at this moment and that she wants to get on this bandwagon because she can tell the stories she wants to tell in a broader way and also in a more lucrative way in television than she's ever been able to in novels.
What is it about the relationship between Jane and the very successful producer who is mining information from her? And it doesn't seem to be as fraudulent as it becomes, but it is, it doesn't seem like Jane ever truly trusts the guy, though.
I think she's almost mesmerized by the possibilities he represents more than trusts him. And she's a very sort of susceptible person in many ways. She met her husband out of a psychic prediction. She tends to be someone who gets swept up in things she's told about herself. But I think that this man is offering her, she's at a point of the lowest point and desperation about her career and her ability to make money, about their housing situation. Television walks in the form of this man who's very charismatic and very smart and funny. And it seems like the answer to all of her problems for a while. I think one of the things someone noticed about this novel they mentioned to me is that, television writing requires a lot of time when you're not writing. You're just pitching ideas. And so a lot of what she's doing seems easier and more fun than writing novels because it's not actually writing. And writing is by nature hard and lonely and can have a kind of grueling quality to it where you're sitting down and you're pumping out pages and scenes. And all that work of just talking in a writer's room can seem really fun and jovial in comparison, but it's also, not writing, and it's also ultimately a kind of empty experience for her.
The term I wanted to present to you was one that you use throughout the novel, which I absolutely love, which is multicultural Mayberry. What is it? How would you describe that and Jane's attraction to it?
Yeah, that's a neighborhood she gets fixated on that she calls Multicultural Mayberry. That's in Los Angeles. It's very Californian to me, this idea of a neighborhood in which every house is a different race, everybody's doing well financially, and it looks, as she describes it, like something out of the 50s, but it has this kind of Obama-esque future fantasy built into it because everyone's blended. And so she gets fixated on this neighborhood, which is kind of bringing together her racial identity with money, basically, and sort of this sort of American dream. That's the place they cannot afford. It costs money to live in multicultural Mayberry, and they don't have any money. So they're left, driving to open houses and going through these tours, being imposters of people who could actually live there.
The
It's very
writer,
Blue Coast elite.
right, absolutely. And Jane is interested in this. And Jane also, I'm fascinated by the writers she's attracted to and what she finds interesting, even though she's working so hard on this novel and it's taking so long, of even what the final push is of what finally gets her over the quote unquote finish line.
She finds an old archaic study of biracial people that was written in the 30s that she ends up finding is the key to her novel she's been writing, that she needs this kind of white gaze to be interspersed throughout these intimate stories of mixed people's lives to create this kind of friction in her narrative. And I actually did find a text like this as I was writing this novel, and I kind of did a fictionalized version of it. But I was so struck. It's a study from the 1930s called The Marginal Man. What I was struck by reading this was the mixed race figure has kind of occasionally captured the imagination of these scholars or filmmakers and how pathologized we are in these views of them. Like, he describes the saddest figure you've ever heard about as this mixed race protagonist and this person in history who's sort of essentially racially homeless and either, you know, doomed to a life of tragedy, suicide, or petty crime. And he describes such a dark view that I think is something I've seen throughout the history of representation of mixed race people. And so part of the other appeal to her of television is the idea that she could write a light sitcom comedy about mixed people that would have none of this darkness and this pathologizing in it. And it would just be a regular family having funny hijinks in multicultural Mayberry as a kind of escape from the tragedy and the deceptions and darkness of history she's uncovered.
Danzy Senna is the author of Colored Television. The book is now out from Riverhead. So she's pitching the show that you just described. She's pitching it to a black showrunner, and it has to be signed off by a white studio executive. And I mean, you're exploring the fact of who ultimately gets to tell these stories and why that is so difficult and why common sense is so often lacking in that process.
Yeah, I mean, there's a kind of hope springs eternal in Los Angeles in particular, but I think it's Los Angeles is like America on steroids in some ways, where everyone here who is not wealthy, who is not in the center of this Hollywood story, still is hyper aware of it and has some kind of peripheral relationship to it. Like, you know, people working, you know, on construction might be acting the days they're not working and they're waiting on an audition. Every realtor I've ever had is an actor and who is just waiting for their big break. And so everyone kind of lives in this state of waiting to have their big ship come in. And it's something that kind of pervades Los Angeles in a way that I don't know if it does in other cities. And so I think this producer really taps into that feeling in Jane that, like, they may be broke, they may have nothing in their bank account and only a bunch of broken IKEA furniture to their name. Just 1 month from now, they could be, you know, in a completely different class bracket. And that's the kind of idea that I think is so essential to Los Angeles in a way that I was interested in and creates a kind of mania and desperation and hunger here.
And brings with it a real stress in the marriage between Jane and Lenny, and because of what she's doing and what she knows he'll find acceptable and what he won't. Not that she is cheating on him in the traditional sense, but cheating on him in a way of, I'm going to go and try to continue the dream that you just described while I know you have your reservations.
Yeah, no, I mean, she's pretending that she's still working on the Mulatto War and Peace. And she's doing other things. She keeps this fantasy going with him that, like, she's just devoted to this novel and that she's going to keep chipping away on it despite all of her failures and all of the ways it sucked their family dry. And he really wants that person that he married, that, you know, very devoted novelist who's willing to do everything for her art and live and breathe off her art. And she's sort of let go of that idea, but he doesn't know it.
Have you ever let go of that idea?
Apparently not. I dabbled in television and all I could come out of that experience was, this would make a good novel.
Which is worth it, right? I mean, that is worth it.
Yeah, no, every time that's a problem for me is that everything feels to me like material for a novel ultimately. So I continue because I live in Los Angeles and it's fun and interesting on one level to play around in Hollywood. I do continue to do certain projects, but my heart is in the novel and in the prose. I'm interested in language. So that's sort of where I think Joan Didion said at one point, you know, she worked in Hollywood and said, you know, writing scripts is not writing, it's notes for a director. And I think it's a little more than that, but it doesn't have the same sort of whole body feeling that I have when I write fiction and I'm grappling with language on the page and prose in that sense.
And I assume as writing that prose on the page, you're conscious of what you can explore as far as, for want of a better term, the issues and the subjects that you want to look into and to examine.
Yeah, I mean it's also the solitary quality of it that makes it scary and makes it hard, but also allows you to fully commit to your obsessions and be in control of the universe. You know, you're playing God, you're playing the director, you're playing the casting agent, you're controlling the weather. You're the person you answer to at the end of the day when you write a novel, as opposed to a writer's room or a producer or showrunner. And that's what makes it so risky, and that's also what makes it so rewarding and so different from that kind of a collaborative process.
I mean, you spoke a moment ago about that process of going in and having so many sessions in late night and talking it out in television and seeing what sticks and throwing it against the wall. But even in novel writing, there's a lot of the thinking of the novel, right?
There are things that are similar, and I think I've actually learned a lot from writing and television. That is, I feel I've learned a lot about the sort of architecture of story and the propulsion. I think I learned how to make something really propulsive through working in television. So I don't sort of see it as an either or. I think there are ways that they can really complement each other, but there's a lot more. Someone I know who works in television said to me, this town can meeting you to death as a writer. And there's a lot of talk, a lot of meetings, a lot of preamble, a lot of series documents, pilot outlines. And I'm always like, can I just write the story? Because that's how I find what I'm writing about, is through this process of actually writing. And that's the thing that's really different, is they want to know what you're writing about before you write it.
Danzy Senna's new novel is Colored Television, published by Riverhead. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LeDuc. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at wamc.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue.